was the fast that happened right before the Day of Atonement, but individual families or people or communities might fast any time that they were experiencing grief or going through a special time of prayer.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
And once again, good morning. According to popular wisdom, how many church elders does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is change. How many church deacons does it take to change a light bulb? The answer is, my grandfather donated that light bulb. How many preachers does it take to change a light bulb? Just one. But it will take him 6 months to develop the program, raise the funds, publicize the event, have the praise team ready with an appropriate song, and work through committee structures to determine appropriate wattage, color, and thread configuration. It is proverbial that churches struggle with change. This is really only so because people in general struggle with change. The house in which my paternal grandparents lived recently suffered a fairly catastrophic fire. Third trip back, I saw the original results of the fire. Second trip back, I saw that where the fire had actually burned through the roof on the south end of the house, that some more of it had fallen in while I wasn't there. And this trip back, I saw the hole in the ground where my grandparents' house used to be. On the one hand, I know that it was just a pile of building materials and that my grandparents aren't missing it. On the other hand, my initial emotional reaction to the fact that my grandparents' house is not there anymore can only be described as grief. I wanted it to continue being there, like it was there all the days of my childhood. This is normal, natural, unrealistic and unreasonable, but normal. I was the main agent in tearing down the house in which I mostly grew up after my parents built a new house behind it. And in that week when we gathered and tore down the old house, there was a couple of twinges of nostalgic sadness about ripping down the old room in which I slept and the room in which we ate and all those things. But the upshot was that my parents now had a better place. It was a good change. Recently, in the course of adding on a deck and a wheelchair ramp to the new house that my parents built, I discovered the foundations of a third house, which had been there before either the house they live in now or the house that they had torn down. From descriptions we had had of that previous house, we thought that it was further north. But no, those foundations were right exactly where I wanted to dig post holes. After having determined the size I wanted the deck and the ramp to be and purchasing appropriately sized materials. But I suppose that's beside the point. The point would be that there was another house there once upon a time, and somebody lived in that house, and those people were probably somebody's grandparents, and their kids probably drove by there for years wishing that that house was still there, and it wasn't. Change. So Jesus took some heat earlier in the gospel according to Mark, for eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners. And now in this chapter, he and his disciples take some heat just for eating and drinking. I mean, the Pharisees and their disciples, they are fasting, going without food, which was for them a very religious exercise. And the disciples of John the Baptist, that guy who spoke so highly of you, Jesus, that guy who baptized you, his disciples, they are fasting as a very religious exercise. But you and your disciples, you're just eating like pigs. Forgoing these traditional religious exercises. The only compulsory fast for the entire Jewish people was the fast that happened right before the Day of Atonement, but individual families or people or communities might fast any time that they were experiencing grief or going through a special time of prayer for some crucial circumstances, or preparing for some other big sacred occasion, or seeking wisdom, or fulfilling a vow. There were lots of reasons for which religious people might fast. The Pharisees followed the dictates of the scribes, and they fasted every Monday and Thursday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., whether or not there was anything special going on or connected to the day. They just fasted as an expression of special piety. Nor is it surprising that the disciples of John the Baptist, John himself being a kind of ascetic preacher, might do some extra fasting, but not Jesus and his disciples. What gives? Are you less religious than all these others? Jesus' answer is twofold, and sometimes people kind of scratch their heads and wonder because they don't immediately get the connection between the two halves of the answers. We'll try to make sure we get that this morning. The first has to do with getting married. And let's begin with acknowledging what we all know is true of all the changes that we pass through in this life, and there are many. Getting married absolutely has to rate up at the top of the list for significant, profound, major life change. We are single, and then we are married. And it is a whole lot more than just checking one box instead of another on all the paperwork. It is a big deal. Marriage changes our daily habits. Marriage changes our economic practices. Marriage changes our list of responsibilities. Marriage changes our outlook. Marriage rewrites our future. Some of the changes are immediate. Some continue in the course of years and decades. But marriage changes who we are and how we live. Insurance actuarials know it. The bank knows it. The criminal justice system knows it. The medical profession knows it. The political establishment probably used to have a better grip on knowing it than they have now, but marriage changes us. Or if we don't change, if we get married and say we're married, but we continue to live like we are single and we don't make the important changes, marriage eats us alive and fails. Jewish society of the first century knew this at least as well and probably better than we understand it today. A great deal of their religious and secular law had to do with changes associated with marriage. One small example. When a Jewish couple got married, they did not go away on a honeymoon. Excuse me. They intentionally, specifically stayed home and hosted an open house celebration that could last as long as a month with everybody coming and going and some people staying. Now, the length and the extravagance of the thing varied according to the financial circumstances of the couple and extended family in question. But everybody took seriously that they were supposed to do this. And your friends and everybody tried to help you out. It might be just a potluck pitch-in dinner kind of thing that lasted a day or two, and then reality dictated that we all need to go back to work and earn a living. Or it might be longer than that, and your friends and family would try to help you make it longer than that if they could. And if it could be afforded, you got the full month, the 30 days stipulated in the scribal law, and you entertained a lot of people, and a lot of them came and went, because not everybody you know can take a month off work, but at least a few people, if it could be managed, who were special friends of yours, kind of like the bridal party in our weddings, would stay with you or rotate in and out of your home during that month so that somebody was there with you all the time. This may sound a little strange to us. I can only tell you that the way we do it would sound strange to them, because their point was, you are now a married couple in this community. Why would you want to leave this community and go celebrate your marriage someplace else where you're not a part of? You do it here in the community, with the community, because that's where your marriage is going to be played out. But whichever way you feel about that, the scribal law allowed that the bride and the groom and their attendants and their stay-on friends, and anybody else who might come and go for whatever time they were present at this big open house, were exempted from any compulsory or expected fasting that might be going on at the time. And it didn't matter if the fasting was connected to a holiday, or if there was been a funeral in the family and people were fasting because of that, or if some individual who might come had made a religious vow and he was fasting because of that. It didn't matter. Whatever the reason for your fasting, while you were there in the open house, you gave up the fasting and you eated all you want along with everyone else because you were celebrating. Yes, I know I said eated. My grammar and syntax are being critiqued in the front row here. Because you are celebrating the most important, significant change that is ever going to happen to these two people. This understood. Jesus gave the first part of his answer. While the bridegroom is with them, the attendants of the bridegroom cannot fast, can they? Even if there were already existing legitimate reasons for which they were fasting, otherwise they can't fast now because the bridegroom is with them. Jesus also accurately foretold that there would come a day soon enough when the bridegroom would be taken away, and then there would be plenty of opportunity for fasting and sorrow. Now, what Jesus is saying is that God sent him to establish a new relationship with his people, a change of relationship so complete and profound that the closest parallel we have for approaching an understanding of it is marriage. Jesus is the bridegroom. The people of God are the bride. Everything changes in the new relationship, and all the changes are good. And there is still doubt and sorrow and trouble and grief out in the world, and people may have been affected by that and may have been fasting because of that and may have been wearing sackcloth and ashes because of that, but for this moment in this present company, those things must not be allowed to take precedence, because the bridegroom is with them. That's the first part of the answer. And the people who heard it, especially the scribes and the Pharisees, understood it completely, understood the implied claim that Jesus was the Christ, the Messiah, which accounts for the second part of the answer. You can't put a new patch on an old garment or new wine in an old wineskin. Both similes make the same point. In my young teen years, I had a little bit of experience with that new patch, old garment thing. I had ripped out the knee of a pair of blue jeans, the only pair of blue jeans I had at the time, and I needed to go somewhere, and my mom was not home at the moment, but she was a seamstress of some capability in those days, and I knew where all her stuff was, and I knew that she had a good little bit of new denim material among the odds and ends in that little closet at the end of the hallway. And I thought to myself, how hard can it be? You just pull out that blue denim material and cut a piece a little bit bigger than the hole in your blue jeans and thread a needle and stitch, 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 and presto, done. Now, I will admit it did not look as good as if my mother had done it. And I got the critique when she got home. Some piddling inconsequentialities about maybe shouldn't having turned it inside out and used more regular stitches and yada, yada, yada. It didn't matter. Suited me. It's done. It's patched. Until the first time the jeans were washed. See, the jeans had been washed a lot of times. The new denim material, this was the first time. The jeans had done all the shrinking they were going to do. The new denim material shrunk a lot. I was amazed what happened. Since the new denim material was attached at all its borders to the old denim material, what it did was it wadded itself up like a prune, like a big knot, right there over my knee. In my stubbornness, I pretended not to notice and tried to wear the jeans anyway. Before the day was over, about 3/4 of the way around that knot, all the threads had pulled out of the old blue jeans and left that part of the hole more ragged and frayed than it had been before. You know what I got out of this experience? A new pair of blue jean cutoffs, which I let my mother hem. You don't put a new patch on an old garment. Neither do you pour new wine into an old wineskin. Now, I don't have any personal experience in this one, but I understand what they're saying. The wine gives off gases, and if it's in something that's closed and stoppered, the gases make the thing expand, and the new wineskin is stretchy and will accommodate the expansion. But if you take an old wineskin previously used, it's done all the stretching it's going to do. And you pour new wine into it, it hasn't done all the expanding it's going to do. And the skin breaks and is ruined. And the wine is spilled. Now, what has this to do with whether or not Jesus and his disciples fasted? It actually has more to do with whether or not the Pharisees and the scribes were going to accept the claim that Jesus made about himself in the first half of his answer, to wit, that he was the long-awaited Messiah. All the religion practiced by the scribes and the Pharisees and by the wider Jewish society was the religion of the Old Testament. And I can't take the time to do it today. I have done it before, will someday do it again, I suspect. But if anybody needs convincing right now, you come and see me. And I believe that I will be able to convince you that the entire Old Testament is really all about Jesus Christ. Every book, all about Jesus Christ. They're prophecies and foreshadows and descriptions about who the Messiah is going to be and what he's going to do and what it's all going to mean. It prepares the people of God for that day when he will come. And Jesus says, now, I've come. Just a couple of chapters back in Mark, we saw that Mark gave a little three-phrase synopsis of the teaching of Jesus. The first phrase in that little triune description was, the times are fulfilled. The Old Testament fulfilled today because I have arrived. The Old Testament religion then becomes the old garment. and the old wineskin, and Jesus is the new material and the fresh wine. He cannot just be added onto the old garment like an afterthought or a repair. He is too strong for it and will pull it apart. He cannot be poured into the old wineskin and contained within it. He is too much for it and will burst it asunder. And the scribes and the Pharisees heard this part too. You're so worried about fasting and everything else that's part of the old covenant religion, which was only a preparation for my coming, and now I'm here and everything changes. And if you can't keep up with the changes, then you and your practice of your religion are in for being torn apart and burst asunder. Because whether you keep up with it or not, everything changes today. Well, we are not the scribes or the Pharisees or first century Jews, but I believe this still speaks to us. The first thing I'm going to say applies to a lot of what's going on in our culture, our nation right now. We are very unhappy with one another over things political and the direction of the new administration and all of that. And I will just tell you this, Jesus Christ cannot be stitched onto the fabric of the Republican Party, nor poured into the wineskin of the Democrat Party. He is bigger and stronger and more important than either or both. The gospel of Jesus Christ cannot be an add-on to our clan, culture, ethnicity, economics, or anything else. He is bigger and stronger than all that, and even after 2,000 years and counting, he is still newer than all that, fresher than all that, more relevant and dynamic than all that. There's the first thing. We cannot receive Jesus Christ as an addition to the things we already have or are. If we receive him, he is going to make us all together new. Praise God. But I want to close with the other part of the truth that I see in this passage. I think everyone will agree with me. Will you agree with me if I say there's a lot of depressing stuff out there in the world? Okay, there sure is. We could spend our entire lives in sackcloth and ashes and fasting in response to all the unpleasantness that is out there in the world. We could do that, but should we? No. Why not? Because the bridegroom is with us. One of the first things people should recognize about Christians is joy. Because the bridegroom is with us. I know the Bible says we ought to be sober, but believe me, sober is not a synonym for gloomy and sad. And we cannot be that if the bridegroom is with us. If it appears to people that Christians were probably baptized in pickle juice and their faces froze that way, we have a problem. How can we be sad and sour and gloomy if the bridegroom is with us? And I know all about the problems with our government, but the bridegroom is with us. And I understand about war and terrorism, but the bridegroom is with us. And I know absolutely that all of us gathered here represent different sets of emotional and relational difficulties and distress that we have in our lives, and all that is true, but the bridegroom is with us. And I know about all the people on our prayer list, and the sickness, and the disease, and the weakness, but the bridegroom is with us. And I know that it's no fun getting old, but the bridegroom is with us. how can we not be joyful? Well, I guess that's the question. Is He with you? If He is, you already know exactly what I'm talking about. If He's not, He could be. He wants to be. He's just waiting to be with you. Oh, give up the ashes and sackcloth. Clean your face up and smile and prepare for the feast. Because the bridegroom is with us.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.